Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording here in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we'll have updates on some major bills passed by the California legislature that are currently awaiting the governor's signature. We'll be interviewing Kristen Caro and Dexter Levy on their campaign to block a term limits initiative in La Mesa. In sports, we'll have details on the Aztecs season opener and on a skateboarder who traveled all the way from San Ysidro to San Francisco. Learn which suburban community had a mountain lion sighting this week, and hear why a local nonprofit is suing over water use claims by SDG&E. In Green Scene, hear why federal whistleblowers contend that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Agency is applying a double standard, allowing wind and solar companies to kill endangered and protected birds without consequences. Our health report will have an amazing story about doctors creating body parts using a 3D printer. Learn why San Diego may soon be a pilot program to test out voting by mail in special elections. And in our agricultural report, we'll tell you why some local farmers are abandoning avocados and citrus growing and what they're growing instead. On Tribal Beat, hear about an astounding archaeological find here in East County. The Crime Beat Report has news about a wanted fugitive who may be in East County or San Diego. And on Destination East County, we'll have all the top festivals and events this week, from Apple Days in Julian to a vintage train ride and more. Plus, learn how you can help a Descanso family that's been struck by tragedy. We'll have all this and more, so please stay tuned for today's East County Magazine radio show.
This is Leon Thompson with a report from our state capitol in Sacramento. San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez has four measures that she authored now on the governor's desk awaiting signature. The measures address medical and educational issues, rights of homeowners, and protection for peace officers injured in a line of duty. AB 2051 would expand health care access in low-income communities by speeding up the process for primary health care clinics to serve Medi-Cal patients. This measure passed the Assembly unanimously, said Gonzalez, who adds that 40% of patients at community clinics in her district are on Medi-Cal. AB 2104 would prevent homeowners associations from fining homeowners who replace their lawns with drought-resistant landscaping. AB 1431 would ban school and college district superintendents and administrators from raising cash for the board members that hire them. The measure aims to prevent conflicts of interest and corruption problems similar to those raised in the Sweetwater Union School District. AB 2052 would assure that all peace officers receive workers' compensation and health protections if they are injured in the line of duty. The governor has until September 30th to sign or veto the bills or have them take effect without his signature.
One in five students nationwide is a victim of sexual assault. Increasingly, campuses across America are facing criticism for not doing enough to protect students from sexual assault. The Federal Department of Education has released a list of schools that may have violated federal laws in their handling of sexual assault cases and harassment. The University of California at Berkeley and the University of Southern California are among the schools under federal investigation. Seeking to reverse this trend, the California legislature has just passed a bill that requires publicly funded universities and colleges in California to adopt a yes means yes policy. So what does that mean? It means that if a student doesn't say yes, it's not consent, and sexual activity can be prosecuted as rape. It's not consent if a student is silent or doesn't resist. It's not consent if one party is drunk, on drugs, or passed out. State-funded colleges and universities that fail to adopt strict policies on sexual assault will not be able to receive financial aid money if this measure is approved by Governor Brown. The bill passed the legislature unanimously, with no opposition from any college or university. Governor Jerry Brown has until September 30th to sign the bill. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with the Sports Report. The San Diego Aztecs opened their 2014 football season with a comfortable 38-7 win over the Northern Arizona Lumberjacks Saturday at Qualcomm Stadium. Sophomore Donnell Pumphrey led the Aztec offense in his first game as SDSU's featured running back. He logged 111 yards and 2 touchdowns on 19 carries and also made an athletic 31-yard catch and run. His most impressive carry came in the second quarter when he ran 33 yards down the sideline, the Daily Aztec reports. After the game, Pumphrey credited his teammates for his performance, thanking the offensive line for blocking and the fullbacks for opening up holes. More than 30,000 fans turned out for the game, which also included a field goal by kicker Donnie Hagman from the 48-yard line. Next up, the Aztecs will hit the road, traveling to the East Coast to square off against the University of North Carolina.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. My very special guests today are Kristen Caro and Dexter Levy, and they are with the campaign that's just launched to oppose term limits in La Mesa. They're calling it No Term Limits in La Mesa. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
I would like to start by asking each of you to tell us a little bit about yourselves, how long you've lived in La Mesa, and what made you decide to launch the No on Term Limits campaign. Dexter, let's start with you.
Well, thank you, Mayor. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm a third-generation La Mesan. I have been involved and or around about politics my whole life. I was involved in high school. I went to Helix High School. I was attorney general there.
My alma mater.
Yeah, well, that's true. It is. I had forgotten about that. So was involved there. I'm currently on the La Mesa Planning Commission, just finishing up my term as chairman, and am probably the longest sitting commissioner in La Mesa. I also am current chairman of what they call the Building Code Review Committee, which is a group we meet only on an as-needed basis, which can be as often as once a year or as far apart as 3 years. What our responsibility there is, we have to look at every building code that comes out and make sure that there's nothing in the current code that the state is required to adopt that would have a major effect on La Mesa. So it's kind of an as-needed basis.
So you have some really strong experience inside La Mesa politics and much else that's gone on in La Mesa through the years.
That's correct. I've been an advocate of La Mesa, needless to say, as living there. But I've attended for years the council meetings and am pretty familiar with things that go on.
All right. Kristen, what about you? What's your background?
I grew up in La Mesa. 4 generations of my family have lived in La Mesa. And I got involved with politics when politics came to my neighborhood. And I formed a group called Save Our Corner to stop 24-hour mini-mart being put right across the street from residential in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, I've stayed involved. I've served on the city's Environmental Sustainability Commission. I've been involved in the community through Las Hermanas and also through San Diego State Art Council.
Very good. So tell us about the No on Term Limits campaign. Why are you opposed to term limits in La Mesa? And listeners, this is a measure that has qualified for the November ballot. So La Mesa listeners, be sure and listen closely.
Miriam, the thing that is so great about this is that this particular referendum is just that. It's citizens who have written in and have signed their names to request the city change its municipal code to limit the terms of office for city council and the mayor and those two offices combined. My problem with that is, what we're actually doing by implementing this issue is that you end up giving away your ability to select. And I'm really concerned for the simple fact that all it takes is one person that is doing a tremendous job that you would not have the ability to return to office. To me, that just is not the way to go.
So you would argue that voters already have term limits. They're called elections.
Absolutely.
Kristen, what about you?
So what we're trying to say to people is, it's important to really look at term limits, what they are and what they are not. What they are is a rejection of the fundamental principle in which our country, our government is based on, that power derives from the people. The Founding Fathers put term limits in the Articles of Confederation, and they removed them when they did our Constitution. And then they gave us a Bill of Rights to guarantee our freedom of expression. And our vote is what puts teeth behind our opinions. So we think that people should look very closely at this and consider what has gone into giving us the vote in the first place. What it's not is it's not a referendum about anybody who currently sits on the council. And we want to emphasize that strongly, because long after we're gone and anybody on council is gone, we will have to live with the outcomes of what comes in November. So many people have fought to give us the right to vote, whether it is the founding of our country or suffragettes or civil rights. It's a legacy we've inherited, and what we'll decide in November is what legacy we want to hand on.
Now, the other side isn't here today. We've previously interviewed them when they were working to qualify the measure for the ballot, which, by the way, I understand qualified by a very, very narrow margin. However, I'd like to ask you a couple of the points that the pro on term limit side raises and get your responses. They would argue that they think term limits are needed because there's a power of the incumbency in America, and that this is, you know, it's important to get some fresh blood in there now and then and give newcomers a chance.
You know, when politics are as polarized as they are right now, it's really easy to take advantage of public frustration and, say, throw the bums out. But you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, the good and the bad. We really don't have a need for it. The only people who gain from this are those who want to eliminate their competition and special interest while it infringes on everybody's right to vote. The truth is, in La Mesa, we're a small town, and the mayor and council give out their cell phone numbers. If you are at a local baseball or football game for the high school, you're likely to run into some of them. You're going to run into them at the grocery store. People, whether you're both incumbents or challengers, have reputations already. They're well known within the city by the time they get to the point where they're running for office. And your reputation is a double-edged sword. It can work for you or it can work against you. So we don't really see a big advantage in that. Add to that the fact that the largest special interest campaign contribution in city history was $27,000 to a challenger. And we have never seen anything even close to that realm. That's more than some whole campaigns.
That particular donation, as I recall, came from not just a non-La Mesa, but a non-California source. It was an out-of-state real estate interest. That can be a little bit scary. You want to know, why is an out-of-state interest trying to get somebody elected to a local city council? What, you know, might there be some hidden agenda there?
We agree.
You know, La Mesa is a Mayberry. We're very proud of that fact. We think that it's what we are. And in our particular case, there have been no indictments. There's been nothing that has come through that, in my opinion anyway, has caused any major reason to make this kind of a substantial change.
Yeah, La Mesa is interesting because it really hasn't had a lot of the fiscal problems that some of the other outlying cities have had, even in these difficult financial times. So I was a little bit surprised, actually, to see term limits surface here. The other thing that's unusual about La Mesa is that it's only 9 square miles. It seems to be a city where people are very civically involved, unlike, say, Congress, where maybe people really don't know who's running, and all they have to base a decision on might be those slick ads or mailers that come in the mailbox. How educated and informed do you think La Mesa voters are when they go to cast their ballot for their city council or mayor?
You know, La Mesa is a very small town. The city council hands out their cell phone numbers to everybody. So elections in La Mesa are face-to-face affairs. And your reputation, it doesn't matter whether you are an incumbent or a challenger, your reputation is a two-edged sword. It can work for you, and it can work against you. But in La Mesa, people pretty much already know who's on the ballot. And that's a really big part of this.
But today in this era of the internet, another tool that voters have for assessing whether an incumbent is doing a good job, what they believe, who the challengers are, what they would bring to the table, is the media. And it's one thing maybe in a town where you don't have any media that's out there covering the city council or the planning commissions. It's perhaps another where media is very available and anybody who wants to, without even paying a newspaper subscription fee nowadays, can log on and read what's happening. Can you tell us about the media availability in La Mesa?
Right now we have 3 publications online that are free for anybody to put their comments on. East County Magazine, of course, being one, as well as La Mesa Today. La Mesa Courier, if you write into them, they publish it both online and in print. And, of course, there's still La Mesa Patch around, now in the form of Mount Helix Patch.
Yeah, there you go. And certainly, especially with La Mesa Today and the Courier, they have some very robust discussions. They're typically out there covering every council meeting, everything the mayor does, everything the challengers say, everything the critics of the incumbents have to say. So there is, I would say, a much greater and more in-depth discussion of just about every detail one could imagine in La Mesa. So it does seem to be a town where voters are better informed, or at least have the ability to be informed if they choose to be. They're not relying on that slick mailer that somebody sends them or what somebody's campaign, TV commercial says.
There are also heated discussions in the readers' comments on the Union Tribune and even Facebook. So there's plenty of arena for discussion of local politics.
Well, there are also candidate forums. You know, not every city has those, but La Mesa, I think last time they had 2 or 3 of them for people, anyone interested could actually come and ask questions and hear them in action.
And they had a great turnout. And I think the other thing when you ask about incumbent advantage is, what this does is it's the reverse. It tilts the field in the favor of the challenger by simply eliminating their competition.
The other issue is they sometimes say that it tends to reduce perhaps corruption, that people who've been in office for a long time might become a little distant from the people and perhaps more beholden to special interests. What would you say to that?
Well, Miriam, because somebody's new, that doesn't necessarily mean that they have integrity. That just that reason alone is not a good reason to select somebody. But by the same token, just because they've been there for a period of time, that doesn't mean that they're going to lose that integrity that they had. That's the advantage. When you do have the opportunity to make that selection, which we have now, every 4 years, you can make that selection without any problem. I just would hate to have, like I've mentioned, I would hate to have a person that is doing a tremendous job, and just because they have reach their limit, they're no longer available.
Dexter raised the question of having integrity or not. The fact is, if someone's self-serving or you don't like their policies, you can vote them out. And if you're corrupt, you can be prosecuted. And all elected officials, they have to submit a quarterly report on any gifts or donations. And it's available to the public. So we have full disclosure.
Yeah,
there's so many safeguards in place already that there's no need for more.
Well, that's a good point. Certainly, we saw indictments down in the Sweetwater School District recently at the local level, and at the state level, interestingly, they do have term limits in Sacramento for the legislators, and it didn't prevent 3 or 4 of them from getting themselves indicted, a couple of them convicted. There's even an indictment on gun running charges and conspiracy, some really serious things. So apparently, being a newcomer in office doesn't necessarily exempt you from being corrupt.
Correct, and term limits don't guarantee ethics any more than the lack of them guarantee corruption.
Yeah, and there were bribery charges up there, too. What else? Are there any other arguments that you would like our listeners to know about term limits?
We've been around in La Mesa and been conducting elections for over 100 years. We've made a pretty good record for La Mesa without term limits. I just don't see any crisis, as we've talked about before, any crisis, whether it's fiscally or otherwise, that would cause people to change that ability. Why give away something that you now have the ability to do just because some of the, you don't find businesses getting rid of people that have 12 years experience. They keep their most experienced people. And I really believe in politics, the same thing should go. People have the opportunity every 4 years to make a selection. If you're doing a good job, granted, you are an incumbent, but if you're doing a good job, the people are going to return you. That's what it's all about.
There's no need for term limits. When you look at the city council, guaranteed in November, no matter who is elected, we will have two people that are brand new on council and one council member with 2 years of experience. That's a majority of the council with 0 to 2 years experience.
Yeah, that's a good point to raise, Kristen. For those who may not be aware, we do have two council members who've stepped down. There are two open seats. Therefore, no matter what happens, you're right, there will be two newcomers sitting on the council come after November and another that's only been there for 2 years.
When we look back over the history, I think it's really important to look over the specifics of who ran against who. When you make some of the statements that they've been making, if you look back at the candidates who've run in the past, you discover a pattern. The candidates who win are the ones who have the most extensive resumes relative to running the city. They've served on boards and commissions. And you eliminate that experience when you eliminate an entire class of candidates. What you get is in the last couple years, last two elections, we had an election where we had four people that had lived in the city for 2 months to maximum 2 years, and they'd never participated in civic life at all.
And if you'd had term limits for the incumbent at that point, you could have had somebody who was very inexperienced winning the office by default.
Not only inexperienced, but even unfamiliar with the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very, very interesting point. What, in your view, are some of the biggest problems that can occur with term limits or that perhaps have occurred elsewhere where they've already imposed them?
Term limits don't necessarily create citizen legislatures, but they do create political musical chairs. And studies have shown that this political musical chairs, it creates inefficient government because you tend to revisit, because they don't have the institutional memory, you revisit an issue.
That's an interesting point. You know, I was in Sacramento for a while. I worked in the legislature 30 years ago or so before they had term limits. And what I heard from people after they imposed term limits who were still there was that the power suddenly shifted to all of the committee consultants. And, you know, many a time when I was up there, you would see somebody think they had a bright idea. They wanted to introduce something and you'd have the gray-haired old legislator that had been around for 30 years and say, not so fast. You know, this was tried 20 years ago, and this is why we didn't do it, or this is what happened. So there, you lose that institutional memory, I think, for better or worse. There certainly may be some advantages to it, but that certainly was a downside that people I knew saw in, you know, in Sacramento once it was in there.
It is. One of the things that you get when you lose this institutional memory is that people who are so new, there's a steep learning curve. And so they're more dependent on staff and they're more dependent on the information given to them by special interests. You really create, in fact, what you're doing is you're giving special interests an advantage because they have the information, they have the institutional memory, they have the long established networks. They're not starting new every regular period like this. When you get rid of the incumbent, what you're doing is you're eliminating the most qualified candidate, and it makes it cheaper and easier for a special interest to come in and install their own candidate.
That's an interesting point, and certainly we have seen a lot of money poured into La Mesa Council races in recent years with the special interests, as you've noted. Not, I think La Mesa's not alone in that, with the lifting by the Supreme Court of how much money special interests can pour into campaigns with the Citizens United decision. We're seeing more and more of that actually across the country as whether it's corporations or labor unions or lobbyists or something attempting to basically buy their way into political power.
The other thing that happens is you end up with a lame duck in their last term, and what you get is someone who has, the public has no way to hold you accountable to them anymore. So they are not as responsive to the public and they can make more extreme rhetoric. There's no downside to being extreme or ignoring the public at that point because they're not running for election again. On the other hand, influence, which they've gained in office, influence is portable. So what they're now going to do, people don't leave the arena just because they leave office.
Yeah.
They stay in politics, but they take their influence with them now and the networks they've established, and they go to work in private industry or they become lobbyists, and they're not leaving politics just because they leave office.
So these local offices become more of just a stepping stone for ambitious people seeking higher office, as opposed to a place where someone can serve their community for a long time. Is that what you believe, Dexter?
Well, I think that probably has a lot to do with it. The biggest thing that I see out there is that people come in, they provide their information to the community, and with our community, because it is a face-to-face area when you're running for office, you have that opportunity to know these people. This isn't a big conglomerate. This isn't where you're out and about and don't know the people. You know and have the opportunity to know every single person that's running.
Yeah, I've lived in La Mesa, and I know it's not uncommon to have had, you know, the mayor or a candidate for council knock on your door and say hi, and people will invite them in, give them coffee. You know, really get to know these candidates face-to-face because it is only 9 square miles, and it seems like anyone who wants to run for office, you don't have to be a millionaire in that kind of a scenario. You just have to wear out some shoe leather, arguably.
Well, that's it. It's really easy when you look at the state or you look at the national government just to tap into people's frustration and say, throw the bums out. But we want people to pause and think about this because that's simply not the case in La Mesa. La Mesa is, as you point out, face-to-face, and everybody knows the candidates.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Miriam, when you're talking about La Mesa, it really isn't fair nor is it reasonable to compare the president, a governor, the Congress, and the state legislature to La Mesa. It's a different animal. And to use it as a comparison is just not appropriate. La Mesa is La Mesa. We need to have this continue the way it is. We've been very successful. It's very important, I think, that we have the ability to return people that are good and to eliminate those that aren't.
Term limits often arise when there's been great polarization among the electorate. But Dexter, is that something that we have seen in La Mesa?
I haven't seen tremendous polarization. What's amazing to me is there is a very small group that wants to go out there and press particular issues.
A political issue-oriented agenda, perhaps, behind this by a handful of people who couldn't get their way by getting their candidates elected in the past?
Well, that's what it appears to be to me, that seems to be what's going on, but I don't see why that's the way to do it.
Well, La Mesa certainly faces many issues coming down the pike that could affect it long term. Some of those issues coming up that future councils will be deciding will be the nature of development in La Mesa. Should it stay a small bedroom, Mayberry-type small town, or should it go with high rises and very dense infill kind of construction? What happens to the future of Grossmont Center? The lease is coming up in a few years. A lot of big things coming down the pike, green belts, and whether or not the neighborhood feel, the parks and recreational opportunities that La Mesa has will be expanded or contracted. These are all some of the things that councils over the next decade or two may be faced with, and certainly term limits could have an impact on the people that will be making those decisions here in La Mesa. Now, you guys are running a very grassroots sort of citizen-to-citizen campaign. But tell me exactly what you're doing to go about educating the public about the No Term Limits in La Mesa campaign.
We are a grassroots group. We are not fundraising. We are completely dependent on neighbors talking to neighbors. We have a website, notermlimitsinlamesa.com. And we also, you can find us on Facebook at No Term Limits in La Mesa. From our website, you can download. We hope to get a dialogue started.
Yeah.
And from that, we have a number of suggestions. You can download a lot of free downloads.
Yeah, I see the buttons that you both are wearing today. Can people get the buttons online?
No, but you can print up the equivalent of a bumper sticker to tape in your car window, because we know people don't like to attach things permanently to their cars.
Right.
We have signs you can print for your shop to put in the window. We have posters available. We even have a graphic for t-shirts. And if you like to go out and exercise at, like, we have a friend who runs at Lake Murray every morning. You can wear your t-shirt and you strike up a conversation with people this way. We're really hoping that people will talk to their neighbors and spread the word.
The whole campaign really, Miriam, is based on neighbor to neighbor. We think it's very important to put the story out there to let people know that there are two sides to this, and hoping that possibly they will take a look at it. One of the famous statements, is it Coke or Pepsi? It's an individual choice. People will make that choice based on their own feelings. We would just hope, please make sure you look at both labels.
Well, La Mesa's been around for 100 years. It just celebrated its centennial. It's my hometown city, incidentally. And it'll be very interesting to see what happens in November with the Term Limits Initiative on the ballot, which certainly will affect the next 100 years and the future of La Mesa. I would like to thank both of you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you, Miriam. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you, Miriam.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
It isn't very often you wake up in the morning to the sight of a mountain lion, but that's exactly what happened to a Scripps Ranch family Monday morning. CBS Channel 8 in San Diego reported that a Scripps Ranch family spotted what they believe was a mountain lion behind their house and made a video. Kathy Camp woke up to the sight while staying at her parents' house in Scripps Ranch and promptly woke her son, JT, to help her zoom in with the video camera. They managed to record video of the mountain lion roaming the open space behind their home. You can see the video on KFMB-TV at kfmb.images.worldnow.com. The mountain lion started towards a pool, but turned around after perhaps hearing the family members talking, then walked towards a ridge. The sighting was startling, but not necessarily unusual. Urban and suburban areas in Southern California have had their fair share of sightings. In 2011, one was hit and killed by a car in 4S Ranch. A year later, one was spotted in a La Jolla backyard. Also that year, up north in Santa Monica, one was found in an office complex and had to be shot. And in East County, a barber in Alpine was startled a couple of years ago to spot a mountain lion in a tree outside on Alpine Boulevard, the main street through town. Online, the Department of Fish and Wildlife has some safety tips when it comes to mountain lions. Don't jog alone, especially when the sun goes down and they're active. And if you do see one, don't run. Make noise and wave your arms. Mountain lion attacks on humans are extremely rare, but if an attack does happen, fight back. JT concluded that he wasn't scared since the lion was outside, but he says the experience was pretty cool and definitely one he will remember. For more information and tips on what to do if you see a mountain lion, go to the Department of Fish and Game at dfg.ca.gov.
A pre-hearing conference on a complaint over SDG&E's water use in the backcountry is set for September 12th. The nonprofit group Backcountry Against Dumps filed the legal complaint alleging that SDG&E violated terms of its permit to build the ECO substation in East County. The complaint contends that SDG&E failed to identify confirmed reliable water sources for construction of the project. SDG&E reported using nearly 91 million gallons of water for the project as of July 31st, far more than originally estimated. The case will be heard by an administrative law judge in the state office building in downtown San Diego at 10:30 a.m. on September 12. Backcountry Against Dumps has contended that SDG&E relied on unconfirmed water sources, some of which may not be available at all. These include the Live Oak Springs Water Company, the City of San Diego, the Hakumba Community Services District, and groundwater from the Campo Indian Reservation. Live Oak Springs Water Company was fined $1 million, and the California Public Utilities Commission actually asked a judge to place the company into receivership last year because of violations that included illegal water sales to developers. More recently, Live Oak was prohibited from selling water to Beta Engineering specifically for SDG&E's Eco Substation project, the complaint states, and yet SDG&E kept listing Live Oak Springs as a reliable and confirmed source. As for wells on the Campo Indian Reservation that SDG&E indicated would provide the largest share of water for the project at one point, only a fraction was actually delivered before the deliveries were suspended. That came after revelations that Campo Tribe's General Counsel never approved the pumping or sale of groundwater off the reservation. And also, this water draws from the same sole source aquifer that provides drinking water to Boulevard and other neighboring communities. SDG&E's permit with the City of San Diego expired in 2013 and has not been renewed, the suit contends, although SDG&E has disputed that point. The suit contends that the lone remaining source, Hakumba Community Services District, cannot come close to meeting the project's remaining construction water supply needs and appears to be in violation of its own governing documents by selling water outside its sphere of influence. SDG&E disputes contentions in this complaint. The company's spokesperson, Jennifer Ramp, has stated that the utility has complied with terms of the state-approved water supply plan throughout construction and is buying its water now from the City of San Diego and Hakumba Community Services District. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
San Diego State student and skateboarder Jim Salamack recently skated from the U.S.-Mexican border at San Ysidro all the way to San Francisco. The 640-mile trip took him 3 weeks, skateboarding 10 to 14 hours each day. He had hoped to skate all the way to the Oregon border, becoming the first person to ever skateboard the entire California coast, but pain in his foot, knee, hip, and back forced him to end the journey early after reaching the Golden Gate Bridge. He hopes to try again and be better prepared. Standing at the Golden Gate, he reportedly said, "Next time." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Two former investigators with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are speaking out to warn that the federal government is ignoring harm to wildlife caused by industrial-scale wind and solar facilities. While the government is prosecuting oil companies for violating laws protecting birds of prey, it is hypocritically giving permits that allow renewable energy companies to kill the same species, including federally protected eagles, without any consequences. The National Review published an article featuring interviews with these whistleblowers. Tim Eicher, a retired special agent with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, says if birds are electrocuted or die in oil pits, the companies face prosecution. But regulators with the federal agencies believe that global warming justifies pushing through wind and solar projects without regard for bird deaths. Eicher says, "They're saving the planet, and if eagles die in the process, so be it." That's the mentality. Dominic Domenici, another former investigator with the agency, confirms that the federal government is, quote, "prepared to turn a blind eye," unquote, to negative aspects of so-called green energy projects. Not only does the government fail to prosecute wind or solar companies that kill birds, now they are even granting those companies permits that actually allow them to kill protected bird species with no consequences. Anyone else doing so could face felony prosecution. Case in point, Duke Energy. After investigators found 14 dead eagles and 149 other protected birds dead at Duke's wind farms in Wyoming, the company did become the first renewable energy corporation to face prosecution for bird fatalities under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. But after paying fines that were a lot smaller than those imposed on fossil fuel companies for the same offense, Duke Energy was encouraged to apply for take permits from Fish and Wildlife, which allow it to kill a designated number of eagles and other raptors in the future without any consequences. Now, the House Natural Resources Committee has attempted to investigate this bias in enforcement of the laws protecting endangered and migratory birds. Back in March, the committee subpoenaed case files for federal investigations under both the Migratory Bird Treaty Act and the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act. But
A committee representative told National Review that Fish and Wildlife Services has stonewalled, failing to turn over complete records and submitting heavily redacted or blacked-out text. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service does not comment on pending investigations or prosecutions. Not everyone agrees the enforcement has been too selective. Mike Dalton, Vice President of Government Relations for the Audubon Society, voiced skepticism and said he has heard that some cases are in the pipeline at the U.S. Department of Interior and Justice Department. But American Bird Conservancy Director of Public Relations Bob Johns says numbers don't lie, and there is a double standard. He cites the Altamont wind farms in California, where at least 70 to 80 golden eagles have been killed each year now for many years, and yet the company has never been prosecuted. There have also not been any prosecutions made public against any industrial-scale solar companies, not even Ivanpah, which some reports estimate could be responsible for as many as 28,000 bird deaths a year. The solar flux technology appears to attract insects on which birds feed, and the high-intensity beam from the solar tower at Ivanpah is burning birds alive, including migratory waterfowl such as pelicans. Eicher says that while fossil fuel companies can prevent many bird deaths with precautions, such as putting netting over oil pits, there is nothing that can stop a wind turbine from killing eagles, other than shutting it off or tearing it down. Major concerns have been raised by wildlife experts over potential eagle and other raptor deaths if Tule Wind is built in San Diego's East County. This project was approved by the federal government for McCain Valley based on studies conducted by David Bittner and paid for by the energy companies. Bittner was convicted in federal court on charges of mishandling protected birds. He operated without licenses for years and refused to turn over tracking data on protected species to federal wildlife officials. He was found to have four freezers full of dead birds kept illegally, as we have previously reported. He was convicted in federal court, but so far there has been no penalty for the energy companies that hired him, raising further questions over just how reliable federal authorities are when it comes to enforcing laws to protect wild birds.
This is Leon Thompson with a Crime Beat report. A reward of up to $1,000 is offered by Crime Stoppers for information leading to the arrest of Tavares Deshawn Garcia. Garcia has a record of assaults, according to a statement issued by the Sheriff's Department. An arrest warrant has been issued for Garcia in connection with a 2012 robbery attempt in Vista. He is known to frequent El Cajon, La Mesa, Logan Heights, Oceanside, and Vista. He may also be in Las Vegas, according to investigators with the Sheriff's Fugitive Task Force. Garcia is 21 years old, black, with brown eyes and black hair. He wears earrings in both ears, stands 6 feet tall, and weighs 170 pounds. Anyone with information on the location of this suspect should call the Crime Stoppers Anonymous tip line at 888-580-8477. Anonymous email and text messages can be sent in via sdcrimestoppers.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
Autumn is in the air, and this week's Destination East County activities reflect that. This weekend, you can enjoy apples, trains, grape stomping, and a powwow. Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, from an attempt to break the world record for fireworks to an end-of-the-summer music festival. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Show's Destination East County.
September marks the start of Apple Days in Julian. The season runs for 2 months in September and October. Visitors flock to Julian to savor apple pies, apple cider, candied apples, and you pick apples directly at local orchards. On weekends, the Julian Doves and Desperados perform free melodramas. The season culminates in a festival October 4th and 5th and a pie-eating contest on October 3rd. But you can enjoy the delicious start of apple season right now.
Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo is offering a Golden State Vintage Passenger Train Journeys. The fall schedule begins with excursions on Saturday and Sunday, September 6th and 7th. These leisurely 12-mile, one-hour trips down the mountain to a tunnel and back will depart from the Campo Depot at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. each day. Reservations are not required. Limited opportunities are also available to ride in the vintage diesel locomotive with the engineer and help blow the engine's horn. Seats are limited and advance reservations are suggested for this activity. For more information, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at prsm.org.
The Sequoyah Band of Kumeyaay Nation will host its 25th annual powwow on September 5th through 7th at the Sequoyah Reservation in El Cajon, located behind the Sequoyah Casino. A powwow is a celebration and a time for people to join together, sing, dance, renew old friendships, and make new ones. Today, dancers and singers from tribes across the nation also come to compete for prize money. You've also found an array of vendors offering Native American crafts, from carved gourds and wooden baskets to hand-carved flutes, blankets, handcrafted silver and gemstone jewelry, and much more.
It's harvest time in Julian, where you can jump into the fun at the Julian Grape Stomp Festa this Saturday, September 6th at Mangini Winery. Guests are invited to help stomp tons of grapes and, of course, savor some of the wine tasting. There are also activities for kids, including games and miniature golf. There's a fee for this event. Tickets are available on-site or through the Julian Merchants Association. Visit julianmerchants.org. And now, for a preview of coming attractions.
Viejas will attempt to launch the world's longest chain of fireworks, more than 10,000, to celebrate its 23rd anniversary on Friday, September 12th at 8 p.m. You're invited to the festivities near the Viejas Hotel pool to witness the sky come alive with fireworks during this Guinness Book of World Records setting attempt. Learn more at viejas.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to take a seat in their amphitheater on September 13th from 6 to 8 p.m. for the third annual Harvest of Stories. Storytellers of San Diego will delight and entertain the audience with nature tales at this family event, which this year also features a sing-along and some dancing. There will also be a nominal cost for this event, $7 for adults, kids 12 and under, $3. Opportunity drawings will also be held and refreshments will be served. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The Backcountry Land Trust will hold its third annual Wine and Cheese Friendraiser on Saturday, September 13th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wright's Field in Alpine. Podunk Poets will provide live music. The event also features a hosted bar, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, and a raffle. Tickets for the Backcountry Land Trust event are available online in advance at bclt.org.
For the 45th year, Julian celebrates the end of the summer with music. The Julian Music Festival will be held at the Mangini Winery on September 20th from 1 to 8 p.m. This year's event features bluegrass to celebrate the festival's roots, western ballads to remember the past, as well as music by current songwriters and singers. Performers range from the cool band Luke performing high-energy favorites to Trails and Rails offering train songs, cowboy tunes, pop, swing, vocal harmonies, and whistling. For tickets and more information, visit julianmusicalfestival.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festival and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County Show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Ed Barena with the health report about a breakthrough for patients suffering from back injuries and other debilitating conditions. Doctors in China have implanted the first ever 3D printed vertebra into a patient, Business Insider reports. Unlike most items printed in 3D, which use plastic, the custom designed vertebra is made of titanium powder, a lightweight, porous material that allows real bone to grow through it, eventually creating a more natural fusion of the young patient's spine. The patient is a young boy with a tumor in his spine that destroyed a vertebra. In the past, such patients relied on metal rod implants, but the results were often far from ideal. Dr. Liu Zhongjun has said the patient is progressing well after his surgery. While this is the first time 3D printing has been used to create a new vertebra for a patient, it's not the first time that a 3D body part has been used. Artificial hips, jaws, and even a skull have been created elsewhere for patients who lost parts due to injury or infection. Doctors rebuilt a face for a Welsh man injured in a motorcycle accident, BBC News reported. 3D hands have also been crafted to help child war victims in the Sudan in a project called Not Impossible. Business Insider reports that 3D organs will likely be next on the drawing board. According to a recent Forbes article, doctors aim to be able to print an entire heart in 3D within a decade. Artificial skin printed in 3D is also reportedly under development. The trend is a case of life imitating art. Back in 1973, when the $6 Million Man show debuted on TV featuring a character with bionic body parts, the plot was largely viewed as science fiction. But today, 3D technology is poised to become a part of mainstream medicine. 3D medical advances are not only transforming lives, they're also offering prospects for big business. Forbes reports that the orthopedic implant industry alone in the U.S. is expected to reach $52 billion by next year.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they seen Harry?
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. San Diego County has long been the avocado capital of the nation, as well as a major citrus producer. But now the drought has made water scarce and expensive, pushing many farmers to cut down avocado and citrus trees or abandon parched groves. Some are getting out of the farming business. Some have replaced older trees with new avocado varieties that can tolerate higher salt content as wells run low. Still others are finding new water-wise crops to yield a future for their farms. Vineyards are among the most popular options, growing grapes for San Diego's fast-growing winemaking industry. Other crops include organic vegetables for restaurants seeking farm-to-table fresh cuisine, exotic fruits such as dragon fruit, which grows on a cactus, and ornamental plants. According to the San Diego County Farm Bureau, San Diego is the nation's second largest producer of nursery plants and second in acreage for guavas, pomegranates, limes, and macadamia nuts.
A Descanso family has been struck by tragedy. Scott Allen and his wife, Julia Hills, were riding their motorcycle on State Route 79 in Julian on August 24th when the motorcycle crossed the middle line and swerved to avoid an oncoming vehicle. They struck a tree, and both were ejected. Julia died at the scene. Scott broke his hip and suffered a compound fracture in his leg. The couple has a son, Chuck. Scott is the owner of a small business, Allen Electric. Julia had worked for the post office. Erica De Hoyos, a friend of the family, has set up the Norman Scott Allen Fund at GoFundMe.com to help with their expenses. She told East County Magazine that Scott needs help to bury the love of his life and pay his medical bills so he doesn't lose his home and all that he has worked for. She adds that the couple had a big heart and were known for helping others. A motorcycle rally on November 8th is also being organized in memory of Julia. Details are pending. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A bill on the governor's desk would allow the registrar of voters to conduct all special elections entirely by mail. San Diego has had many special elections in recent years, including mayor, city council, state legislature, and Congress. But manning polling places is costly, and turnout in special elections tend to be lower than general elections. Fewer than 20% of voters cast ballots in several recent special elections, including a special election that put San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez into office. Gonzalez authored the measure that, if signed by the governor, would allow San Diego's registrar of voters to conduct elections for any open legislative or congressional seat in San Diego County entirely by mail-in ballots. San Diego's vote-by-mail special elections would be a pilot program that, if successful, could later be adopted statewide. Gonzalez says vote-by-mail elections would increase turnout and save money. The measure is supported by San Diego's Registrar of Voters and drew no opposition from voter advocacy groups. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson. This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Leon Thompson with today's Tribal Beat Report. Two agave roasting pits discovered recently in Hakumba Hot Springs have been carbon dated, indicating Kumeyaay Native American occupation in the Hakumba region dates back at least 9,000 years. Termed an outstanding recent archaeological find by the Imperial Valley Desert Museum in Akatia, the agave roasting pits were unearthed during construction of SDG&E's Eco Substation project at Hakumba Hot Springs in San Diego's East County. Howard Cook is chairman of Hakumba Hot Springs sponsor group, the town's advisory planning board. He believes the find should have impacts on future projects pending in the area. He told East County Magazine, "This is highly relevant to the proposed Hakumba solar project located next door and sharing roads with the under-construction Eco project. Certainly this calls for a cultural monitor and perhaps some preliminary excavating of the proposed site by the Historical Society and Native American historical cultural experts," Cook concluded. A new exhibit at the Imperial Desert Museum displays a vertical graph showing the dig site strata above a replica hearth. Yucca, juniper berry, cactus, and grass seeds were found in the ovens used by the ancient Kumeyaay people. The exhibit will travel to other museums for 9 months before being permanently installed at the Imperial Valley Desert Museum.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.